If you're an income investor and you're not generating more than $500 a month, we have one question for you.
Are you crazy?
Let ETFGuide.com help you. A $100,000 portfolio using our timely strategies should be able to generate between $500 and $2,000 per month.
Go to ETFGuide.com
to get our monthly income trades. Click on ETF Combos, and we'll show you how to turn your investments into a cash cow.
Isn't it time you lowered your risk
and increased your monthly income? Go to ETFGuide.com, and we'll show you how.
You're listening to the Index Investing Show. This is America's only weekly program focused on the important stock and bond indexes and the financial products that track them.
And now presenting your host,
Ron DeLegge. Ron DeLegge.
Welcome to the program. Great to have you with us. This is your weekly insight into the major stock, bond, and commodity indexes. Coming up on today's broadcast, a new report from the Federal Reserve attacks leveraged and inverse performing ETFs, saying that they could destabilize financial markets during periods of high volatility. We'll get into that. I also want to share with you my mega investment theme report, which has just been published in my monthly newsletter at ETFGuide.com. Yes, the September newsletter is out, and I'm going to be sharing some tidbits with you on today's program. Also, framing the arguments about investing in gold. Do two wrongs make a right? We'll get into that. We will also get into some of your phone calls along with your tweets and emails. I'm going to give you the phone number. We're here live. If you want to talk about a particular stock, mutual fund, ETF, investment theme, we can do that. Just give me your first name along with your city. And the ticker symbol would be helpful, too, because we can locate what you're talking about that much faster. 877-711-5611. And my Twitter handle, at Index Show. And you can tweet me there and tweet the program live. Also, if you would like to send me an email, ron@indexshow.com. So let's get right to it. Taking a look at financial markets, where we ended for this past week. Well, actually, we give you kind of a recap on a year-to-date basis. We don't really look at the weekly time frames just because it's such a short period, and I like to give you a little bit of a longer time frame just because it gives you a little bit more perspective on what is really happening in the financial markets. So taking a look at the S&P 500 since the beginning of the year, I mean, we've got all nine industry sectors in positive territory. So what does that tell you about the broadness of this particular stock market's current rally? And it is a rally. And SPY tracks the S&P 500 up around 18% since the beginning of the year. Pretty excellent number in terms of performance. If you take a look at the broader stock market here in the U.S., which includes not just large company stocks, but also mid as well as some of those small caps, ticker symbol VTI, ahead by just a nudge over 18.25%. So we've got good performance here in the U.S. Elsewhere around the world, if we take a look at some of the individual single countries, most are in negative territory. So the U.S. is one of the rare outperformers. Some of those other outperformers in terms of market performance are Europe, Japan, Asia, and the United Kingdom. Other than those four areas, you've got the rest of the world in terms of global equity performance in negative territory, being led by emerging market stocks. Those have been the laggards. And in terms of bonds, wow, what a move we've had in the yield on the 10-year Treasury. My goodness. It has been, since the beginning of the year, we've had more than a 50% move in the yield on the 10-year Treasury. We're now at 2.83%. Will we dance with 3%? I think we will. I think we will. We've got the momentum to get to 3%. I also want to share with you on today's broadcast, and I can name a number of particular rate-sensitive sectors that higher interest rates are bad for, but I'm going to highlight one for you on today's broadcast that I think is a real opportunity for you bears. And I know you're out there. I know you've been very angry, very upset about this market hitting all-time highs, and some of you have even self-imploded because of your impatience and the fact that you try to short markets that are still in a confirmed uptrend. And that's a good way to nuclear bomb your investment portfolio, isn't it? Step in front of a train. Go ahead, be my guest. But on today's podcast, I want to focus on a sector that looks like it's ready to break down. It looks like it's ready to crumble. So we will get into that. We're here. 877-711-5611 is the number. Please join us. Let's take a look at some of the economic news. How about home builders? The builders, home builders' confidence have now risen to their highest point in nearly 8 years. National Association of Home Builders Index increased 3 points to 59 in the month of August. Now, that's the highest point since November of 2005. Also, household debt has fallen here in the U.S. That's because, well, Americans are holding less debt than at any time since the recession began. Now, total household debt, including mortgages, credit cards, and auto loans, was $11.15 trillion at the end of the second quarter. That was at the lowest level since 2006, according to the New York Federal Reserve. Look at that. So think about this. Let me give you some perspective. So U.S. households, when we combine their mortgages, their credit card bills, and their auto loans, they owe $11.15 trillion. All right, let's just round it down because you know me. I'm a generous person, right? So let's just even it out at $11 trillion. By comparison, your U.S. government owes $16.9 trillion. That's currently what the debt ceiling has been set at. So you can see $16.9 trillion versus $11 trillion for U.S. consumer debt. So it just gives you kind of some perspective on just how much sovereign debt that the U.S. government has taken on. And then, of course, I mean, do we even want to talk about all the other liabilities? You know, Medicare and social insecurity and all of those other liabilities that just add to the overall tab. 877-711-5611 is the number. We're here. We're talking the birds and the bees of successful investing. Of course, where does it begin? I mean, with all the confusion and chaos in financial markets and interest rates and the stock market and commodities, I mean, where do you begin? Where does a person even begin when it comes to building a rational investment plan that can help them reach their goals? Well, it's very simple. I mean, it's not rocket science. What we're trying to do here is to build an investment portfolio that protects our wealth during times of turbulence, but at the same time, we'll be able to perform and beat inflation and to beat some of the other enemies like taxes that we all face. And the foundation of a rational investment plan is low-cost index funds and index ETFs. That's where you begin. Low-cost index ETFs that touch all the major asset classes. So we're talking about U.S. stocks, international stocks, emerging market stocks. We also talk about bonds, an important asset class. We also talk about having some exposure to commodities, definitely REITs or real estate investment trusts, and of course, cash. And when we build in a portfolio that has a foundation on these various asset classes in a diversified manner, well, we can reach our investment goals. We minimize our investment costs. We minimize our tax liabilities because, well, ETFs are very tax efficient. And then we also avoid the problem facing so many investors when they bomb themselves by picking the wrong stocks or stocks that blow up. So these are some of the things that we try to help you implement in your own investment portfolio. Going to give you a rundown on where some of the top performing industry sectors are so far this year. We will also get into my framing of the gold argument, do two wrongs make a right? I want to talk also about this new report from the Federal Reserve. What a bunch of hypocrites. They have come out talking all about leverage and the danger of leveraged and inverse ETFs in markets that are highly volatile. We will talk about that. 877-711-5611. At Index shows my Twitter handle. Be here or be nowhere. So, which industry sectors will be damaged the most by the almost 53% rise, year-to-date rise, in yields on 10-year U.S. Treasuries? Well, I'm going to share with you one idea for you bears, and we feature on this broadcast, unlike so many others, both long and short, trading themes and ideas to capitalize on the trends that surround us. You compare this program with others, and all the others have got a bias to the long side. They tell you, buy this, buy this, buy this, buy this. It's all long. But we like to feature occasionally some short ideas just to mix it up, because you can make money on both sides of the market if you're just on the right side of the trend. And so I'm going to share an idea with you coming up. Which particular industry sector will be damaged the most by the rise, the 53% year-to-date rise in U.S., the 10-year yield on U.S. Treasuries, and that is a trend. Right now, the 10-year is at 2.83%, and I think 3% is ahead. Some of these long-term bond funds, long-term U.S. Treasuries, have been getting crushed. Ticker symbol TLT, which is the iShares. It's an iShares long-term U.S. Treasury ETF. It holds treasuries with durations or maturities longer than 20 years. TLT is down around 13%, and it just continues to get crushed. And so take a look at your portfolio. If you loaded up over the past several years on long-term U.S. treasuries or long-term bonds, take a look at those positions, and it's time to really to go back to the drawing board and ask yourself, why do I own those positions? Why am I holding positions that are getting crushed? And there has been a trend change alert in the interest rate market, and these types of bond funds will be the most hurt by further increases in interest rates. So cut the bleeding, stop the bleeding, and cut the losses, and take a look at some of these positions that you may own, that you may have accumulated over the past several years. They've done well. They've done well really up until this year. And so now is the time to prevent further losses from escalating. 877-711-5611 is the number. We're here if you'd like to join us. If you want to talk about a particular stock, mutual fund, ETF, I'm game. In the gold market, there's a particular ETF called the Market Vectors Gold Miners ETF. That's ticker symbol GDX. And it's linked to the NYSE Arca Gold Miners Index. There will be some big changes after the market close on Friday, September 20th. This particular index will be undergoing some changes. And the big changes happening with this one is they're going to be expanding the universe of companies owned within the index to now include non-U.S. listed companies. And also, they're going to exclude companies with less than a $750 million market cap or market size. So this is going to be taking place for the NYSE Arca Gold Miners Index on September 20th. And once these changes are implemented, we don't know what GDX is going to look like or how it's going to behave. But my educated guess is GDX will end up looking more like, and maybe even behaving more like, some of its competitors, such as the iShares MSCI Global Gold Miners ETF, that's ticker symbol RING, which, by the way, RING carries slightly lower annual expenses of just 0.39% versus GDX 0.52%. Nevertheless, GDX is still the largest in terms of assets, the largest gold miners ETF with almost $7 billion in assets. So let's talk about the Confederacy of Dunces. This was the lead story in my latest newsletter, the September ETF Profit Strategy Newsletter, which has just been published. I encourage you to pick up a copy. It's available at etfguide.com. And really, the Federal Reserve, since the beginning of quantitative easing, which began way back, in 2008, they've looked like an infallible institution. Their goal was to push down interest rates and keep them depressed. And as rates fell, well, the value of the Fed's bond portfolio swelled, thereby creating unrealized capital gains. But we've had a change, a very, very dramatic change in the fortunes of the Federal Reserve. And it goes back to this surge in the yield on 10-year treasuries, now making the Fed look like the dunce that I've always suspected it was. So Scott Menard, he's the Global Chief Investment Officer at Guggenheim Partners. This is what he had to say about the latest happenings at the Federal Reserve. Listen very closely. I'm going to read what he said. Quote, "Our estimates show that the spike in bond yield since the first quarter of the year has caused a mark-to-market loss of $192 billion on the Fed's holding assets, equivalent to approximately all of the unrealized gains that the Fed had accumulated since it began to implement quantitative easing in late 2008. Although in keeping with their own accounting principles, the Fed does not record mark-to-market losses, a continued increase in bond yields would incur actual losses should the central bank decide to sell assets." End of quote. That's Scott Menard, Global Chief Investment Officer at Guggenheim Partners. So I've got a couple of uncomfortable questions for our audience. Maybe you can help me answer these questions. What would happen if interest rates rose just 4 percentage points more? Could losses at the Federal Reserve's or in the Federal Reserve's fixed income portfolio top $1 trillion? What kind of meltdown would that be? And could it lead to a central bank solvency crisis? Who at that point would be on the hook for bailing out the Fed and its highly esteemed members? Tell me. Perhaps this is the rogue wave that nobody in D.C. or Washington, or Washington, D.C. or Wall Street or anywhere else sees coming. And I'd like to apologize for suggesting it, because it is an uncomfortable thing. So think about that. Any further rise in interest rates, the Fed's portfolio is going to continue, the bond portfolio is going to continue to get slammed. So we've already had around $200 billion in losses for the Fed's bond portfolio. And if rates continue higher, just 4 percentage points more, we're looking probably, the Fed is looking at $1 trillion in losses. I mean, that's just incredible. And just to give you some perspective on how large losses have already been, $200 billion, I mean, give us some point of references, DeLegge. So AIG in 2009 recorded the largest loss in corporate U.S. history. That was $61 billion. So compare that to the Fed's $200 billion in losses because of bonds. 877-711-5611 is the number. We're here. Rising interest rates catching up with the Fed. And you thought that they controlled interest rates, right? You were sold a lie. It's not true. It's not true. The Fed does not control interest rates. They manipulate interest rates. They try to play with them, but they don't control interest rates. That's controlled, ladies and gentlemen, by the credit market. And whether there is an appetite to lend money to various institutions. What would you like to talk about today? How is your investment portfolio doing? I want to get into framing arguments about gold investing. Do two wrongs make a right? I'm going to share some tweets with you. Basically, a debate that I had with a particular person on Twitter named Hedgehog Trader, who defends gold to the death. And my comebacks and takes I'm going to share with you. We will also get into any of your calls. 877-711-5611 is the number. We're here. Want to share with you a short idea for those of you that are bearish on financial markets. Here's one particular industry sector. It's not a part of the S&P 500, but I want to share it with you, and I think it's poised. It's poised to crumble. So stay tuned for that. This is the Index Investing Show. I'm Ron DeLegge. More when we return.
John DeLegge.
You've heard them on the radio and seen them on TV.
Gold experts promising big profits. The truth is, gold prices have crashed, and investment demand is down over 50%, according to the World Gold Council. While gold experts keep promising higher prices, the Profit Strategy Newsletter at ETFGuide.com told its subscribers the gold bubble would pop.
Our gold alert given to subscribers in early 2013 resulted in a 500% gain.
Listening to gold experts would have lost you a boatload of money. Listening to ETFGuide.com would have helped you to profit. Stop listening to gold experts and stop following the crowd. Subscribe to the Profit Strategy Newsletter at ETFGuide.com and make money. Our no-bull approach is world famous, and what happens next in the gold market will shock the entire globe. Join today and get a $50 bonus by using promo code SAVE50. We'll tell you what to buy, what to sell, and when to do it. Be ready for the next big move in gold only at ETFGuide.com.
So here's a tweet thread started by a hedgehog trader. He's a gold enthusiast. He said Eric Sprott, who's a gold industry expert or executive, says that by next summer, he thinks that the price of gold will have made new highs and stand around $2,400 per ounce. And my comeback to that was memo to Mr. Sprott. Gold is in a two-year bear market, and prices are down 24% since 2011. Truth over fiction. Hashtag truth over fiction. So hedgehog trader had the comeback. Objectively, we've had a 10-year gold bull market up 600% since 2012 versus the S&P 500, which is up just 80% since that time frame. My comeback was objectively hedgehog trader. Gold is down 24% since mid-2011 versus a 38% increase in the S&P 500. It fails to beat, by the way, not just the S&P 500, but every single major asset class, even deplorable emerging markets. That's what gold has done since 2011. It's failed to beat every major asset class, not just the S&P 500. And so Daryl Montgomery, who's been on this program, he weighed in. He is an advocate, by the way, of gold also, but a little bit more of a balanced approach to gold than hedgehog trader. Daryl had this to say in a very sarcastic tone. He said, wait a second, commodity bull markets don't take pauses. Gold dropped 47% between December of 1974 and mid-1976, and then it went up 800%. So thank you, Daryl, for citing that market history. And the point here, though, is that who's right? Do two wrongs make a right? Well, we're both right in a sense, hedgehog trader and the index investing show, because of the fact that it really depends on the time frame that we're talking about here. Because the time frame he's talking about from 2002 to present, yes, it's true that gold has outperformed the S&P 500. But then my argument was, well, look at the recent trend. Since 2011, that's not been the case. So my argument's right. I've got the stats and the numbers to prove it. And then if we go even back even further, the bigger picture, if we look at the performance of gold from 1980 really to about 2007, that 27-year period, look at the chart on gold and tell me what you find. It didn't do squat. It was dead money for 27 long years. So the point here is what's going on here? What's going on? Who's right? Well, we had another Twitter individual jump in and said, he said basically, and I think it was the best point out of all, he said that you both are guilty of anchoring your biases. It depends what your bias is. Are you comparing short-term performance versus long-term performance and what period? And this is interesting because of the fact that it's absolutely true. One can anchor, and this is really a psychological, I don't want to say disorder, but it's a deficit. It's an error. We extract historical data and we try to make future decisions based upon historical data. And we do need to refer to history because we really don't have much else. But at the same time, we have to be cautious with understanding that history is not going to repeat itself verbatim. As Mark Twain said, it does sometimes rhyme, and history does at times repeat itself, never repeats itself verbatim, but closely. And so the point here is that this is an anchoring bias issue. So we're both right. Two wrongs can make a right, I guess you might say. And the point here is that it depends on the time frame you're looking at. The short-term to immediate trend, though, and the performance doesn't lie. The immediate performance trends in gold are still down. Even with its recent rally, you know, gold is still down over the short run, more than 18%. GLD, which is the Spider Gold Shares, we tracked that one on this broadcast, tracks the price of gold bullion. GLD is still down more than 18% and down over 20% since 2011. That's a bear market. So gold, we will shall see if it rises. But ultimately, we put our hunches aside. We put our biases aside. The point here is to invest in assets of whatever kind at the right prices. That's really what the message is here, the bigger message. I don't care if it's gold. I don't care if it's stocks. I don't care if it's bonds, real estate. You cannot, and I cannot emphasize this enough, you cannot buy assets at the wrong price and expect to have positive results. Okay, you just can't. And this whole idea that, oh, it doesn't matter what I buy something at. I could buy it at whatever price. If I'm a long-term investor, I'm always going to make money. That's not true. And a perfect example of this is the NASDAQ Composite Index. The NASDAQ Composite Index, which closed at just over 3,600 points, okay? 3,600, that's what the NASDAQ Composite is at. If you bought the NASDAQ in March of 2000 at around 5,000, you've been sitting on dead money over the past 13 years. I'd say 13 years is a long-term investment time horizon. How about you? Is that long enough, or do you need another 13 years? Do you need another 10 years? 13 years to me is a pretty long-term time horizon. And the fact that you had a long-term buy and hold approach with the NASDAQ Composite didn't turn into a success, did it? Because you're still in negative territory if you bought in March of 2000, because it's still way below that. We're at 3,600 points on the NASDAQ. So my point here is that buying assets at the right price is crucial, one of the crucial things to your success. 877-711-5611 is the number. ron@indexshow.com is the email address. My Twitter handle, @indexshow. If you ever miss our regular weekly broadcast, you can pick up our free podcast. It's available at itunes.com. Just search under The Index Investing Show. And taking a look at earnings of these 464 companies within the S&P 500 that have reported earnings for the second quarter, 72% have reported above the mean estimate, and 53% have reported revenues above estimates. So the hurdle was pretty low for the second quarter, and it's not really a surprise that so many companies beat estimates. Now, for Q3, 75 companies have already issued negative earnings per share guidance, while 17 have issued positive guidance. And taking a look at sector performance, industry sector performance, some of the top performing sectors so far this year, well, some of the familiar names, XLV, which is the healthcare sector, that's the healthcare ETF, ahead by almost 25% since the beginning of the year, easily outperforming the S&P 500. That's the top number one performing sector right now in the S&P 500. Biotechs, pharmaceuticals, all on fire. XLF, which tracks the much-hated financial sector, also a great performer, ahead by just over 23%. And JP Morgan, of course, in the news. being charged there with that London whale of losses, $6.2 billion in losses. But nevertheless, this sector is still responding pretty favorably as a group. And then one last sector, consumer discretionary stocks, ahead by just over 23%. XLY is the ticker symbol there. And although consumers have slowed down their spending at retail stores, this continues to be a pretty good sector. And XLY, again, is the ticker symbol for consumer discretionaries. Well, coming up next, I'm going to share with you the one industry sector that's going to get crushed by higher rates. I'll be right back.
The Index Investing Show with Lon DeLegge.
Okay, so I guess nobody cares about Alan Greenspan and the trivia question of when he became chairman of the Federal Reserve. You got another, 5 minutes in the show to answer the question? And if you don't, then I will. When did he become, what year was it that he became Federal Reserve chairman? If you know the answer, 877-711-5611. Ron at indexshow.com is the email address. You can also tweet it at Index Show. Now, if you ever miss our regular weekly broadcast, you can pick up our free podcast. It's available at iTunes, and just search under the Index Investing Show. So taking a look at some of the industry sectors within the S&P 500, healthcare continues to lead the way. XLV, a top performing sector since the beginning of the year, ahead by just over 27.5% and outperforming the S&P's 18.9% return, outperformed by almost 10%. So healthcare stocks continue to be a very hot performing sector. Consumer discretionary stocks also doing well. XLY ahead by 26.5%. Financials, XLF, also ahead nicely by almost 25%. And then some of the industry sectors within the S&P 500 that have been lagging, if you could say lagging. I mean, all nine sectors are in positive territory, but XLB, which is basic materials and contains some exposure to those, that dreaded gold mining sector, XLB ahead by just 7.5% and lagging the S&P 500 by a pretty wide margin. Also, utilities and tech stocks also lagging, but still up respectively between 11 and 12%. Taking a look at the valuations of the S&P 500 itself, according to FactSet, just give you some quick points of reference so that you understand where we are at in terms of historical valuations. S&P 500, according to FactSet, is currently trading at 14.5 times its expected earnings for the next 12 months. And that is just slightly above the index's average price earnings ratio of 14.2% over the past 10 years. And the S&P's forward PE hasn't crossed above 15 since October of 2007. So that just gives you some quick perspective. And then in terms of earnings, of the 450 companies within the S&P 500 that have reported earnings to date, for the second quarter, 72% have reported earnings above estimates. And in terms of revenues, 54% of companies have reported sales above estimates. So they're doing pretty good in terms of earnings, but at the same time, the bar was set pretty low. So thus the beat rates for many companies being pretty high. Okay, let's go to San Francisco. I think we might have some people that know when Alan Greenspan became the Federal Reserve Chairman. Let's go to San Francisco. We've got Bobby with us. Welcome to the program.
Hello, sir. Thank you.
So when did Alan Greenspan become Federal Reserve Chairman?
You know, I think it is 1987. I'm not sure.
Well, that's a darn good guess, and it's exactly right. Ding, 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 ding. So do you just call radio programs and just guess off the top of your head and happen to be right? Is that how it works, Bobby?
No, actually, you know, I've been studying, like, Federal Reserve and, you know, like, the scam, of course. I like the way you say his name. You know, but, yeah, I was confused between 86 or 87, and I guess I was right.
You were right. And you like my purposeful slips, and I'm glad you're enjoying that. Stay on the line. We're going to get you a copy of Gents With No Sense. And let's go to Richard in El Cerrito. Richard, welcome to the Index Investing Show.
Hi, Ron.
Talk to me.
Alan Greenspan was Federal Reserve Chairman from 1987 to 2006.
Oh, he added the till 2006 as a bonus. Well, I'm feeling extra generous, so you get a copy of Gents With No Sense. Stay on the line.
Thanks, sir.
And let's go to Fred in Comfort. Fred, are you with us?
Yeah.
Talk to me.
I'm guessing January 3rd, 1987.
January 3rd? Where do you come up with that date? I made it as easy as I could. It actually happened, Fred, on August 11th of 1987.
I thought you were trying to throw us.
No. Listen,
I thought you were trying to throw us off.
Listen, I don't throw curveballs on this program. I'm a fastball pitcher. So no screwballs, no knuckleballs, no curveballs. I'm all fastballs. I will throw an occasional spitball, but well, hopefully you're enjoying the show, Fred. Stay on the line because you'll get a copy of Gents With No Sense also. So look at that. Three in a row, and hopefully they're learning something besides just having fun. So I want to talk real quickly before we close on today's show about interest rates. And the fact is rates have been heading higher, and many have been taken aback by this. And do higher rates automatically translate to higher income? And so I examined this past week in an article that I wrote at etfguide.com with that same title, two asset classes and the yield income on them. And the asset classes are familiar, stocks and then bonds. And so if we look at the S&P 500's current dividend yield of 1.97%, so that's what it is currently. And that figure, by the way, I didn't invent that. I base it upon what the Standard & Poor's tells us is the estimated 12-month dividends. So that's taken directly from the horse's mouth. So currently, 1.97%. We go back to early 2009, S&P 500's dividend yield was much higher. It was actually 3.25%. So the point here that I want to make is the higher rate environment that we've had here that's really taken hold this year, well, if you've been a long-term equity owner, you've been definitely rewarded by higher stock prices, but look at your dividends. Your dividend income is actually less, well, primarily for new buyers of stocks. And so the higher stock prices have come at a serious cost, lower yields, particularly for new buyers. And so let's take a look then at bonds. Bond yields and bond prices, I've told you 1,000 times, and I'll tell you 1,000 more times, are inversely correlated. And although yields have been climbing, thereby producing more income for bond investors, those higher yields have been offset by losses in your bond prices or principal. Okay? See the memo that we sent to the Federal Reserve. $192 billion in losses at the Fed because of this very thing. Higher rates, lower bond values or prices, they've been getting slammed. And so for bond investors, you know, if they sell their bonds at lower prices, if they're forced to liquidate or rebalancing, what have you, the potential to generate higher income on a lower sum of money is greatly impaired. So then let's take a look at the other factors. We can't just take it at face value and say, okay, well, the 10-year yield on treasuries is 2.5%. That's what you're getting. That's what you're netting. That's your gross. We got to factor in taxes and inflation. And if we factor those two things in, well, you're really at a negative yield or rate of return. okay? Because inflation, we haven't really had a serious out-of-control inflation, but the CPI, which tracks consumer inflation, is over the past several years will steal about 2% of your 2.5% yield. So you're down to 0.5%, and then we factor in taxes, boom. Taxes eat away your 0.5% return. So you get my point here. The point is that higher rates don't necessarily mean higher income if you're still using the wrong strategies. So building a long-term fortune through income investing in both up and down markets, it involves two simple steps: producing a sustainable income and protecting your principal, and also combating low-yielding assets in today's environment. Even though interest rates have gone up, we're still in a relatively low-rate environment. So those are the facts. We hope you've enjoyed the program. Go to ETFGuide.com to read my daily articles. And that does it for another episode of the Index Investing Show.
The opinions expressed in this broadcast are not necessarily that of our advertisers, sponsors, or broadcast partners. The discussion of investing is general and should not be construed as investment advice or an offer to buy or sell securities. Listeners are responsible for their own investment decisions and results. Before investing in mutual funds or ETFs, always consult a prospectus for risk, charges, expenses, and other information. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Past performance is not indicative of future results. No reproduction or dissemination of the Index Investing Show is permitted without the expressed written consent of its producers.